The John Schneider Show on Wyman and Bob every Thursday until draft day with Seahawks President of Football Operations, John Schneider.
I think this is the first time he's ever heard his official open. John Schneider, the President of Football Operations and General Manager, is here with us. Is that the first time you heard it?
It is, and it doesn't sound cheesy at all.
Is that sarcasm?
Sounds like welcome to the ballpark.
It's big. You need a big introduction, a man of your caliber. Oh, come on.
Yes. Hi, Brady.
What's up, John?
How you doing?
Good to see you again.
Yeah, nice
to
see you.
Are you nervous knowing
Brady's
Brady's
following me around here in Orlando? Yeah.
Do you see him and go, oh, geez, here we go again. Here we go again.
Head on a swivel.
That's right. Well, how did all that go in Orlando? How did everything go out there? I know we talked to you a bit about it, but we were off the beaten path last week, so we didn't get a chance to get deep into it. Do you kind of come back and reevaluate conversations and progress made out there? What's the fallback after that?
Well, I think still working through the kickoff rule and, you know, some tweaks to it, or the strategy of it, you know, talking to Jay Harbaugh about it and Fitz upstairs. You know, it's going to be unique. It's a game changing play. It's going to be a real play. I think it's going to be fun. Like, the more you keep diving into it and, okay, who's going to be active, who's going to be inactive, who are you going to want out there? You know, you can have a different type of athlete out there now too. And so, you know, they're not covering as much space. So I think, you know, the kickoff thing for sure. The other stuff, you know, not. I mean, everybody knew the tackle thing was going to go through.
Yeah, still hate that. But the kickoff thing.
Well, the players don't like it either, which is interesting. But
yeah,
you know, they weren't for the horse collar either.
Horse collar makes more sense. Yeah. This hip drop looks like every other tackle to me. But
well, Dave Wyman is totally for it, right?
Super for it. Yeah. Super excited about that.
I thought he was going to wring my neck.
I heard that
a couple weeks ago.
I think he felt betrayed that you were supporting it.
Yeah.
But the kickoff.
But he's on a vacation again.
Again, yeah. Well,
wow.
He needs rest. He's older.
No, you guys are in Arizona.
Yeah. But the kickoff thing, what I don't get is these guys can't move until the ball is either lands or is fielded.
Right.
So is the receiving team, the guys on the line, are they going to be staring back at the...
You have to watch the ball, yeah.
So these
kinda
guys...
Like, I think we were talking about last week, kind of like it's going to feel like a fast break, right? Your shot goes up, you're looking for the rebound.
And as soon as they turn around,
the
guy's going to be in their face.
Yeah, now you got to find your target. And
huh.
Big hands thing, like, you know, it's going to be a big hands game because they're going to be right there. They're going to be so close, so...
So you might have
and then
two...
And that's why, you know, one of the primary reasons we signed Laviscus, and we've been talking to him... Chenault, and then is that out there yet? Or
yeah, it's out there.
Okay. Yeah, you're looking at me like who? And so, you know, we've been talking to him. Was like, I mean, he's a great returner and really, you know, powerful dude. Like D, you know, has that explosive feel to him. And so we were like, man, let's go for it. Literally, like maybe half hour after the last meeting. So it's gonna be a different deal.
Yeah, and just to clarify, with the rules, like, how do you think that's going to – it sounds like teams are going to use multiple returners. What about the rule is going
to
dictate
that? You have to have
two
returners.
Okay.
Yeah, so the XFL deal was one returner. And so I think a lot of the – you know, initially when they were talking about it was a lot of the angst within the special teams coaches community was that if there's just one returner back there – the ball's going to be, you know, dropping. It's going to look sloppy. There's going to be a lot of line drives. It's like get the ball on the ground, so it's a jacked up play, which, you know, people thought could lead to more injuries, and then, you know, may just look like a sloppier play in general. So having the two returners back there really takes that away. Plus, if you had the one returner, you know, you could really, you know, strategize. Like if you're covering a kick over here on the left side and you drop the ball, you know, into the right, you know, quadrant of the landing zone or whatever. This guy's not going to be able to get there at all. So having the two returners is kind of was a way they worked through things. So I think it's just funky. That's what we keep talking about. You're talking about the owners' meeting. So
yeah.
And then what do you like about Chenault as a receiver?
Versatility. You know, he's that guy that you just get in the ball. You know, there's run after the catch stuff in college. We love them coming out. You know, I mean, as soon as you give that guy the ball, he's just incredibly explosive. So he played a lot of running back last year. As a matter of fact, I think he split time between like the running back room and the receiver room. Right now, he's going to be in our receiving room. So, he'll come in there and compete with that group. It's going to be a fun group.
When you see moves made like we just saw with Stephon Diggs,
yeah,
and do you guys start talking amongst yourselves about Well, now the Bills are going to be looking for a receiver, and maybe they're going to be wanting to trade up
because
they're sitting there at 28. Do you start going through all the scenarios that may impact you guys at 16?
Absolutely, yep. You know, we've talked about it in the past. So the pro guys, you know, are in charge. They're basically the pro scouts or the experts with their specific teams. So, you know, DJ, Armani, Willie, those guys, like, okay, so what is you know, Buffalo's world look like now? You know, what kind of ammunition do they have? Would they want to be getting up into the area we are if we want to be moving back? Yeah, absolutely. It's a constant conversation.
John, you and Mike have made it clear that there's work to be done on the offensive line. We talked about that in Orlando. What can you tell us about where things stand in your search to solidify the interior of your offensive line?
Yeah, we're working through that. We've had some guys in. We'll continue to do that. We've had some veteran guys, guys that have started games and, you know, put another veteran in that group, and then, you know, hope to address, you know, things in the draft as much as we possibly can. But, it's, again, we're not playing games tomorrow, so we'll continue to, you know, work our way through post-draft, trades, summer, all that kind of stuff. So it's not an area that's being ignored.
Loud and clear. Gotcha.
Yeah,
hear you over here.
You're hearing it,
yeah,
huh?
Hear you.
Who do you hear it from? You're not on social media. Who?
No.
Who's in your ear?
Dave keeps me, you know, he's...
He tells you what everybody's saying?
Yep.
He'll say Wyman's
upset
about
this.
Yeah,
and my son Jack does too.
Really?
Yeah.
They let you know who's disappointed.
Hey, Dad, don't get on social media. I'm like, dude, I don't know how to get on social media.
So really? No burner account? No John Schneider burner account?
No John Schneider burner account.
Really?
No.
You think he would tell you if he had one?
I had a Twitter thing several years ago just to kind of like read stuff, and I was like, it's just way too negative, man.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's just like the
negative. Bit of a cesspool.
Yeah. So I was like, okay, no. None of that.
Cesspool might be putting it nicely.
Yeah. We have our text line too, so there's a version of it. But yeah, it gets a little angry on social media. So you're making the right choice, I think.
Yeah, it's just, you know, whatever we can do to, you know, get our cortisol levels down.
Joey Lane. I almost called him Jeremy Lane, not Jeremy Lane. Joey Lane.
Jay Lane, close, yeah.
Yeah, your new – that would be something if Jeremy Lane was your new vice president
of
football administration.
I'd be here.
What can you tell us about Joey Lane?
Joey lives – his wife's from here, lives in Sammamish, and, you know, Matt and I had talked about a succession plan for a while. He had an opportunity to go to another club, and so – it was really, he didn't want to move, and so it was just the timing of it worked out perfect. And so, real even keeled, much like a lot of salary cap expert kind of guys, like they're similar. They're, you know, very much to themselves a little bit. He's a really even keeled guy. Ryan Pace gave me a call yesterday, who was the GM in Washington or in Chicago with him, and was like, this guy's, you know, like the best, and all the background stuff was great. He'd been working with Russ Ball, who's a good friend of mine, in Green Bay. He was actually trained by Russ Ball and Mickey Loomis when they were in New Orleans. And so Russ, maybe Russ more so than Mickey in New Orleans and their group, very similar strategies in terms of budgeting for a salary cap and negotiating style and that sort of thing.
I imagine there are some observers out there who don't realize, you know, there is a position of, you know, vice president of football administration that, you know, handles contract negotiations, oversees the salary cap. Can you talk about just why that job is so important?
Yeah, checks and balances. Really, you know, you can't just it's not like this, you know, never-ending world of cash. You know, you have to be really careful how you appropriate your funds. And, you know, we have to be smart, especially if we're going to be a team that wants to acquire and add all the way throughout the season, or redo guys during the season if we possibly can. You know, we had a year in there where we were able to budget appropriately. Where we were able to do Cliff and KJ towards the end of the season. We've done that a couple times. But, yeah, there's a big discipline involved there, and so it's a governor. And it's also, you know, National Football League liaison helps us with the rules, you know, making sure we're compliant with everything. And, so we're not losing draft picks or, you know. But you know, all these guys, everybody has different negotiating styles. Joey's going to have his own. And Joey Lane, Joey Schneider's going to have his style. Matt Thomas had his style. Russ Ball, Mike Reinfeldt, Denny Thune. All these guys I've worked with, Andrew Brandt, they all have different styles. But, they're all very much like, You know, it's a very important, have to keep their world intact, have to be on top of it. And you know, we've been blessed to be around a lot of really talented guys.
You guys set aside a certain amount of money for your draft picks,
yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
How much flexibility is there in that if you start trading picks and you accumulate more, all of a sudden
question.
That number changes?
Yeah, great question. You know, when you go up, you're adding cash, right? So, you know, we are at 16. The signing bonus slated there is like 8.5 compared to, you know, the big one last year at 5, right? The difference is huge.
Yeah.
So, you have to be careful, you know, make sure you're budgeted appropriately so that, you know, if we do move up, it looks a certain way, or you're moving back and acquiring more, you know, more players. But then that signing bonus number is a little bit slotted lower.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but you're still adding another whole signing bonus. So, yeah, you have to be flexible and pliable and just be, like, you know, strict with, you know, what that's going to look like. It's not just willy-nilly like, hey, you know.
Just make moves.
Go outside of the cash tree.
There you go.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Not to stress you out, but I believe the draft is 3 weeks.
3 weeks
today.
Yeah. Yes.
Is that right? So what do these next 3 weeks look like for inside the organization?
Yeah, we landed last week in like 11:30. We were delayed coming back from Orlando, and our driver, John's a just great guy. He's like, yeah, wow, I can't believe the draft's in 4 weeks. I'm like, holy, thanks a lot, dude.
A little panic set in.
No, next 3 weeks, you know, we're going to be working through the weekend. We're going to have a great weekend. We have these weekends scheduled just like really quiet here, being able to study. So we're going to have one of those all day Saturday, all day Sunday, where we're kind of like just sweeping again, going through guys that have worked out real well or medical grades have been affected. We just had medical grade. We had a medical meeting a couple nights ago. And so, you know, you lose a bunch of players there or you have to move them down, which is a bummer. Or sometimes you gain players based on different orthopedic grades, but that's kind of rare. But we'll go through this weekend, and then the scouts will come in on Tuesday, and then we'll start our meetings on Wednesday, and we'll just attack it like we haven't, I'm being sarcastic here, but like we haven't started before, you know, just like really open mind. We start, you know, just like we did, you know, when we started building the board, and we'll go through and you know, figure out how, what everybody's spring looked like, you know, what we've learned since the last time we were together right before the combine. And then, then we'll get the coaches in there, and then we'll just kind of the room kind of like, you know, gets smaller and smaller and smaller until, you know, we have, you know, a day where there's like maybe six of us, and then, you know, Mike and I will have a day, and then, you know, I'll have some time by myself in there.
As far as medical grades go, they do their thing at the combine.
Yep.
And then you guys have the 30 visits.
Yeah. Then,
so
there,
you
then
do
there's
your own
then
medical.
There, then, yep. Then there's rechecks. So there's guys that, you know, aren't complete at the combine, so they'll bring guys back for medical rechecks. We'll be getting those grades. I think that's, matter of fact, I think that's this weekend coming up. And then we'll bring guys in as well. We're bringing people through right now to, you know, more MRIs, more scans, X-rays.
So they're not, they don't do everything you want them to do at the combine.
Well, those are for guys that we want to see more of, or
right.
Our guys weren't able to like put, you know, our docs weren't able to like exam themselves. You're reading other people's notes, and we want to say, you know, can you, you know, see how this guy, you know, put your hands on this guy and see how he feels.
And if I understand the rules correctly, you can, when you bring a guy in for a 30 visit, you can do medical tests on him, but you can't work him out. Is that right?
I wish we could work him out. That'd be fun. Yeah, but no, we can't.
Okay. So what else happens
it's kind of like a unrestricted free agent visit. Really, it's really trying to get to know the person more. We put together a whole list of questions that we still, you know, things we still want to get answered, things that are kind of gray or you know, we don't feel great about. We want to sit down and be able to discuss that with the player, have them spend more time with the coach, their position coach, make sure that's a good fit, you know, personality wise, and just working through the process of whether or not this is a guy that's definitely going to be a Seahawk that we could say, okay, yeah, you are definitely, we feel good about you being on our board. We feel really good about selecting you.
As far as gaining all that knowledge with everybody going through all that, when does that wrap? Are you guys already done with those, or when are you done where you know everything you need to know about anybody you're interested in?
I would say pre-draft. Yeah, no, you never know everything, obviously, right? So, you know, as much as we can before we wrap it up, we'll be done with that probably the Monday before.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What's it like going through this process with Mike McDonald for the first time, and what are you learning about him?
Yeah, it's crazy not being with Pete right now. It really is. It's you know, Mike loves this stuff. Pete loved this stuff. You know, he was like really into it. He'd be like down in my office, like Johnny, have you seen this game? You seen that game? You got to check out this game. Or, you know what I mean? I'd be like, yeah, I was doing that during the fall. You're getting ready for, you know, when you were game planning. You know, have you watched Ohio State, Michigan? No, I haven't watched that one, Pete. Like, yeah, but no, like just it's different. We had a cool meeting yesterday. We were kind of just explaining, like, philosophically what this looks like, our preparation just with the whole staff, and that it's there's no walls. We're all in this thing together, and they've felt it right away because they came right in the middle of free agency. They were all kind of being hired, and we were just, you know, the Nolan, Trent, Matt Berry, and Willie, and those guys were doing a great job of just, you know, just kind of like helping them through the process. Like, hey, Brady, can you check out this guy? Because we're going to be bringing him in. Or we have a really, you know, we have a good feel for this. We think this guy's going to be a good fit. His market's kind of coming to us, you know. And so those guys really started getting a feel for that. And then now it's going to be going through the draft prep they're working on. They're doing a great job with their Zoom interviews. All the questions that they're answering, the football stuff, is awesome. And, you know, it's just been different. There's, you know, you do something with the same person for such a long time. It's just, everybody's totally different. I mean, Coach Holmgren, Mike McCarthy, Marty Schottenheimer, you know, those guys were all, you know, very, and Pete, you know, they were all very different the way they approached acquisitions. So, but Pete, I would say Pete's a good evaluator, and he was really into it. He acted like one of the scouts. He was just like, you know, he'd pound the table for guys and be like, "That's my guy. That's my guy." You know, so. But I don't, you know, feel that with Mike. Mike's, you know, not Mike's, you know, kind of like just they're kind of getting their programs put in place. He's kind of learning, studying the guys, and then, you know, I think we'll get a better feel once we get into meetings. We have a good feel from a free agency standpoint. He's a good evaluator, obviously, you know, being the coordinator in Baltimore, having the effectiveness that they did on defense and putting guys in the right spots and everything.
How much, if at all, has your role changed in this time with Pete not being there? Are you taking on something you didn't do before? Is there something you're responsible for now that you didn't, that was somebody else's before, or you're exactly the same?
No, it's exactly the same. You know, Pete was amazing in terms of, you know, he could have been that guy that, like, you know, put his foot down, was like, hey, you know, contractually, at the end of the day, you know, I have final say or whatever. And he rarely did in 15 years, you know. He never said, hey, we're not doing this or we're going to do this. It was more along the lines of, I could tell he didn't feel good about, you know, a trade or an acquisition or a waiver. I could feel that. So it's like, well, why would we force that? And why head down that road, you know? So, but yeah, he was, it hasn't changed in that regard.
Has there been a change though, in terms of like the types of players you're going to be looking at certain positions, the physical profiles of that player, that, you know, maybe it was one way under Pete Carroll and the type of player he wanted at a certain spot? Is it any different with Mike McDonald and his defense?
No, not really. No. You know, Pete and I would always joke, you know, like, oh, you know, the Seahawks, they like those big, tall corners that run 4.3.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Who really? Does
that, right? You know, yeah. Like, you know, it's like the Mariner guys. Like, well, who? This guy's you like the guy that hits home runs, right?
Yeah, big fan of home runs.
Yeah, we like those guys too, you know. No, it's not really, no. I mean, yes, we've listened to them. You know, obviously, we want to know what they're looking for with the coaches, with, you know, by position and everything, but it really does. It hasn't changed all that much. I don't think anybody really goes into it saying that you want to, you know, play with a corner that looks like me. You know,
see, these are the kind of things we get on text. John Schneider has an action hero bedroom voice.
What does that mean?
I don't really know, but they put a smiley laughing face. Okay. So I guess it's not the cesspool kind of comment we're used to. So that's the kind of stuff you know, people weigh in with. And then once you leave, they'll go, how come you didn't ask them who they were drafting at 16?
Do you guys, did they make fun of you guys on this?
Oh, yes.
Oh, sweet.
Come on, man.
I want to read some of those.
Yeah, you probably sent some in.
There's a whole segment devoted to that.
Yeah, we do mean text every Friday. We do mean text. So they take their shots at us. And I get a feeling some of them are coming from John. I'm not sure.
No, I promise you. I do not have the time to do it, although I would like to. Maybe in June, if you see something coming in,
take a special
shot. I did
shot
call you guys one day when you guys were at the stadium.
Yeah.
You were down at the Mariners game, and I was like, I was listening to them talk about something. I'm like, man, those guys are full of horse pucky right now. I'm gonna call those guys.
They got no idea what they're talking about.
No, they wanted me to. I'm like, no. No, they were with Adam Ray.
Adam Ray?
Yeah.
Yeah, right, John, going back to Joey Lane and the idea of, you know, having a certain guy to negotiate contracts, I've always been curious, and this is probably the best opportunity to do it. Are there any GMs who handle negotiations full-time?
Oh, full-time?
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't think so.
Okay.
Yeah, it's too, I would get on the call with Matty a lot, you know, when we were going to have, like, real intense conversations, you know, Matt Thomas, we would get on together, and Joey and I will probably still do that. But no, it's there's too much communication going back and forth, and it's too long of a process.
Yeah, and I've always been curious about the mechanics of a negotiation. Does that typically happen face to face? Is it over the phone? Is it?
It used to be
email?
Face. Yeah, it used to be face to face a ton. Yeah, it's changed. You know, it's cool this year. Drew Rosenhaus actually flew in here for Chandler's deal, so that was awesome because he was really like let's sit down and knock this out. And we literally sat there for like 4 or 5 hours. That's like total 1990s. It was cool, and so we were able to work through that and get that done. But a lot of it, you know, there's guys that, you know, have been like Mickey Loomis was a cap guy for the Seahawks actually, mm-hmm. and then Randy Mueller in New Orleans, and then he became a general manager. So there's guys that negotiate to become general managers. There's been I think Marty Herney was one of them as well. And there's
John Idzik, is he another one?
John Idzik. Yeah, awesome. Yeah, and John was an evaluator though too. He started out in pro personnel and then became negotiator. Mike Tannenbaum. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of guys that. You know, just they're negotiating full time or in NFL compliance full time, and then, you know, move into the charge of the football operation.
John, always good to talk to you, man. We appreciate
you. And it's way better in person.
I thought you were going to say it's way better when Dave's not here. I thought that's where you were going. But
I'm surprised he's on vacation again. Brady, these guys are like in Arizona, and then they're like, you know. Like they don't like we're doing this show. You're at the game. Yeah,
it was opening.
Opening day.
Come on,
give me a break, man.
Come on, man. Yeah. Come on.
It was loud and clear.
It was good running into you the other night too. That was fun.
Yeah, very fun. Yeah.
John, we appreciate you, man.
See
you. There you go, John Schneider, with us every Thursday. We'll come back, talk about a bit of what we heard from him coming up live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. This is Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Our thanks to John Schneider, who joined us in the previous segment. In case you guys are just tuning in, you didn't catch that conversation or didn't catch all of it, it will be on the podcast page after the show at seattlesports.com. Just click the podcast tab, scroll down to our picture, click on that, and it'll be right there waiting for you. Click subscribe. That's the key to the whole thing. You need to do that, and it makes everybody's life a lot easier. But always fun to talk to John. He's got such a great personality. He's very light, likes to joke around.
Yeah, I thought I was going to be the butt of a joke. I was certain of it.
He took no shots at you.
I escaped, yeah.
I thought he was about to take a shot at Dave when he goes, yeah, that's a lot better, and then he said in person.
Well, you tried to tee him up for it, but he didn't.
He didn't bite. Yeah, he hates doing it because we were at Mariners opening day last week, and we did it on the phone. Then we did it on the phone from the combine, and he doesn't like doing it on the phone.
Yeah, I have picked up on that. He has said that a few times. Yeah. Everything's better in person.
Yeah, certainly. He gets to take a look at us. Come on. Who doesn't win in that scenario? So what grabbed you in that conversation? Was there anything that stood out to you in terms of it's light in terms of action out there right now? I mean, yeah, there's a Stephon Diggs trade and all that, but in terms of the big acquisitions, none of that's really happening right now.
Right.
The prep for the draft is going on. Anything grab you?
Yeah, I mean, I think we all knew that they're going to sign a guard here at some point, and he confirmed that. And he did confirm that the new kickoff rule was a big factor in them signing Laviska Shenault, just knowing that they're probably going to have two return men back there at once. So basically, you know, you got to replace DJ Dallas, and you can't just do that with one guy in D. Eskridge. You got to have another guy back there. And so that was a factor in the Shenault signing. I think there was also just kind of going deeper into the ins and outs of the draft and kind of the makeup of a scouting department. He talked about how their pro scouts, you know, how you ask him about the Stephon Diggs trade and how, you know, they take in all that information and wonder what's going to happen next. I think there was some interesting commentary there about just the makeup of a scouting department, where it's you've got the college scouts, and then you got the pro scouts. And obviously the college scouts are huge this time of the year because they're the ones who are going to the schools and going to the games and writing reports on these players, and they develop the sources within all these schools, whatever territory that they're assigned to. But then you've got the pro scouts who, you know, they obviously factor in heavily in free agency, but they're important this time of the year going into the draft as well, because as he was saying there, it's their job, that, you know, the pro scouts, to really have a feel for what other teams are going to do and what their needs are. And that helps John navigate, you know, the draft board and, you know, see things coming like, hey, you know, this team really needs this. This is what their depth chart looks like. This is what their history tells us about, you know, what they might do with this pick. And you know, that helps John as he decides where he might need to take a guy, what trades might be available, what players might be available at certain spots.
Keeping that in mind, I'm wondering how disruptive it is when there is a coaching change, because now teams, I assume they're doing something similar, doing the same thing. They got their departments looking at all these teams, and when they look at the Seahawks, for 14 years, yeah, they had a sense of this is how Pete likes to do things with John. And Pete, as he said, was kind of the final stop, even though he didn't play that card. He was, you know, so you had a sense of their tendencies, if you will. I wonder how like they're kind of flying blind this year when they would try to evaluate what the Seahawks may or may not do at 16, because we don't know. McDonald's never been a part of this process as a head coach.
Right.
John hasn't been the man before. I mean, he's now the president of football operations in addition to the GM. So that dynamic has changed. I'm wondering how other teams view the Seahawks from the outside.
Yeah, and I thought it was interesting that John told us that there isn't a huge difference in terms of the different types of personnel that they're going to want at certain spots, just, you know, going from a head coach. Obviously, you know, coaching staffs all kind of have their specs about, you know, hey, they like this type of body type to play at this position. But I guess, you know, he said it's not all that different, and maybe that's because you're not shifting the style of defense. You know, you're not going from a 4-3 to a 3-4. Mm-hmm. So it's not like, you have this massive shift in personnel, just body types that you might be looking for. So, but yeah, that is an interesting point about other teams may not really have a great feel for the types of players that they're looking for. And I guess we will see how much they start to change. I mean, I think the cornerback is probably the spot where we have seen them for the most part, not as a rule, but for the most part, you know, they have gone after bigger, taller guys with some exceptions over the years. And so, you know, we maybe see them more open to, you know, just a lot of different body types at that spot. More guys like Trey Brown, you know,
yeah,
was one of the exceptions to the big cornerback rule here for so many years.
What do you think of these? He brought up the hip drop, which Dave and I have been railing on forever. I don't really get how that differs from a regular tackle. I don't know what a guy is supposed to do to it when they're trailing a ball carrier. I don't understand what it is, because it's their body weight that brings them down. So unless you're in front of the ball carrier, it is your weight that is bringing that guy down, unless you want to try to trip him and grab his feet.
Yeah, do like a full extension dive.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, once you leave your feet as a tackler, that's your body weight. That's gravity bringing him down, and that's what they want to try to root out of there. Also coming from the side, they showed one as an example. I think it might have been when Edwards got hurt, and I think the tackle kind of came charging in from the side. He was about to be beyond him.
Oh, Mark Andrews, yeah.
Andrews, yeah. And then the guy came in and just grabbed him, and his weight brought him down. Yeah, he landed on his legs. I don't think he was trying to land on his legs. He's grabbed him around the waist and brought him down. I don't know what the alternative is. I'm very interested to see, okay, don't do this, do this. What is the preferred way of tackling now?
Yeah, so I was at the league meetings, and I sat in on the press conference where they announced that the rule change had passed unanimously. And then
you watched the video, right? Did they show you the video?
They did, yeah. Now, they did specify that, God, what did they call it? A certain type of, I think, a swivel hip drop tackle. And so we're
they call it unweighting themselves.
Yeah, which I think unweighting means, you know, lifting your feet off the ground. And then the swivel aspect of it is like swiveling your hips around. Now, if I remember correctly, I think it was Rich McKay, who's the chairman of the competition committee, said that there's basically three criteria that will make it a foul. And I think it has to hit all three of them. And one of them is that, you know, the defender, that the tackling player, has to land basically on the back of the ball carrier's legs, or, you know, his ankles or his feet or the back of his legs, which is really what causes the injury, is
right.
You know, and we've seen that. We saw that with Geno Smith in the Giants game, Monday night game last year. In fact, as they were announcing the rule change, you know, they had a TV out there and they showed, you know, a dozen or so clips of plays from last season that would qualify as penalties under the new rule. And that was one of them. And so I think, to maybe talk you off the ledge a little bit, I think one thing that why this may not be as disruptive as you might think is because not all of these tackles are going to have the element of a guy landing on the back of the ball carrier's legs. So, you may execute the tackle similarly up to that point, but if you don't land on the back of the guy's legs, which is what causes the injury, then that wouldn't constitute a foul. So there may not be as many of these as you think. I think the one of the league executives said that there was, it averaged out to about one per game last season. Mm-hmm. That basically tackles, like, as they reviewed all the plays from last season, they found, you know, and based on the criteria they're now going to put in place, there was about one of them per game last season.
Yeah, I guess I'm going to need to see it, because I just picture, like, even a running back bursting through the hole beyond a linebacker. Linebacker dives, gets him around the waist, lands on the back of it because he's going to fall forward. It's his weight that brings him down. Invariably, the legs are right there. I just don't know how you avoid that. It's physics. I don't know. I guess I'm going to need to see it. But in explaining it, I don't understand how they're going to avoid it.
The one thing I'm not looking forward to is I think one of the you know, unfortunate aspects of how often pass interference is called now is that basically on every deep throw where there's any level of contact, it's the first thing you think of is there a flag?
Yeah.
You know, and it just takes away from the flow of the game, where it's almost like the announcers are trained now to say no flags on the play, because you default to thinking that if there's any contact and the ball isn't caught, that there is going to be a flag.
Yep.
And I just wonder if it's going to be like that now, that basically every tackle that takes place in the open field, going to assume that there's going to be a flag thrown?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we'll see what it looks like. All right, coming up, the worst owner in baseball strikes again. We're going to hear about that when we sweep the dial. Coming up with Wyman and Bob, we got Brady Henderson in live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Scanning the airwaves for the most interesting and entertaining stories of the day. Sweeping the dial every afternoon at 4:45 with Wyman and Bob.
Well, Bills GM Brandon Bean held a presser after the Stephon Diggs trade, and he was asked if he had talked to Josh Allen or let him know beforehand that it would happen.
I have not talked to him since the move. I think it's important for me to make sure, if I think something could happen, to make sure he's not blindsided. I did alert him that, you know, there had been some inquiries and it wasn't 100% off the table.
Huh. How do you think Josh Allen felt about that? Now, we have no idea what their relationship was like. We know what their production was like on the field, but, I mean, it could be extreme one way or the other. He could have been, what are you doing? You're killing me. You're taking away my best weapon. Or he could be, thank goodness, that guy was a giant pain in the ass.
Yeah, my guess is that Josh Allen has some mixed feelings about this. Certainly, you know, anytime you trade away a caliber player like Stephon Diggs, who's a four-time Pro Bowler, and you don't have a whole lot left in the cupboard, yeah, he's going to be missing that guy production-wise. But, I mean, I do think there have definitely been whispers about those guys not really, you know, being on the same page, seeing eye to eye. And so, from a personal standpoint, I wonder if there may be a little bit of relief, even though from a production standpoint, he knows they're going to have their hands full trying to replace that.
Sweeping the dial.
Well, we're about to hear from John Fisher, the A's owner, and, you know, he's not very popular, but this is Chiefs president Mark Donovan, and Kansas City, the Royals and the Chiefs are also dealing with their own kind of stadium situation. So he tells a local TV station, KSHB, that they have to explore all options now because the Chiefs' plan for public funding was voted down.
I just know that for us, the Chiefs, we would have to look at all of our options.
Do those options include leaving Kansas City, Missouri?
I think they would have to include leaving Kansas City, but our goal here is that we want to stay here. And we're willing to accept a deal which is actually better for the county to stay here.
There's always that implied threat of, well, we got to take everything into consideration, and that may include leaving town. You always got to hang that out there. I mean, I don't know how serious they are about truly exploring. Where would they go?
Well, it might just be as simple as moving across the border into Kansas. So it wouldn't be like, you know, the Sonics moving to Oklahoma City. I think it would be like, you know, you just move to another part of the same metro area.
Region.
But I mean, I'll tell you, I went to that stadium it was December, right around Christmas, December 2022, when the Seahawks played there. It looks like it's stuck in time. And I mean, it looks like something out of the Jetsons. Like, it looks very 60s.
Yeah.
Like, it's a very old stadium, and it looks it. And so, you know, you would think that it's time for them to build a new stadium. And you would also think that they've got the, you know, the fan base and just the success as a franchise to support something like that. But you're also asking taxpayers to potentially foot a massive bill. And I think not a lot of people want to do that.
But as much as I get that they don't want to do that, that is the identity of that area.
Yeah.
The Chiefs and the success they've had and the amount of revenue they probably generate for that area. So I understand both sides of it. It'd be weird to see the voters just dig their heels in and go, no, not paying for that. I understand it on some level. You're dealing with billionaire owners who people feel like you should put your money into your product, but that whole region benefits from their presence, especially with the level of success that they've had and everything that people coming in from out of town and hotels and restaurants and everything. I don't know. The idea of them leaving to me seems about as foreign as it gets. I couldn't imagine, unless it's something minor like you're talking about, the border's right there.
Yeah, Kansas City's right on the border of Kansas and Missouri.
Yeah, so,
yeah.
Often people will confuse them for being in Kansas.
Yeah, I know of a certain somebody who...
Yeah, prominent people.
Yeah, right.
Sweeping the dial.
Okay, here's John Fisher, as promised. So the A's owner, which, by the way, because they're moving to West Sacramento for just 3 years, for the next three seasons, they're not going to have any formal city name. They're just going to be either the A's or the Athletics. There's no Oakland, there's no Sacramento or West Sacramento. They're just the A's or the Athletics. And here's John Fisher talking about how happy he is to be in West Sacramento.
I just want to say how excited I am to be here in West Sacramento in Sutter Health Park, celebrating a momentous day for this community and a momentous day for our 123-year-old franchise. We're excited to be here for the next 3 years, playing in this beautiful ballpark, but also being able to watch some of the greatest players in baseball, whether they be Athletics players or Aaron Judge and others, launch home runs out of this very intimate, the most intimate ballpark in all of Major League Baseball for the next 3 years.
He's a damn liar. He's not excited about playing in West Sacramento in a minor league stadium. Are you kidding me? He's lying out of his teeth right there. I'm excited to see Aaron Judge smash home runs against my team in this little quaint ballpark here. The A's are, he's a disaster. He's a disaster.
So do the A's not have a single player that would have been worthy of him mentioning by name? Did he had to mention a Yankees player? Like,
they're not good.
And is there not an A's player who can hit a home run?
No, they've got a couple of players, but they also look like a team that'll probably lose 100 games again this year.
Okay.
But he's just a terrible owner, wildly cheap. He'll take the revenue sharing that comes from the big spenders,
yeah,
the teams that have to pay the luxury tax. That money gets divided up, goes to people like him, and he doesn't put it back into his product, he puts it into his pocket. He's a terrible owner, has been a terrible owner, and remains that way. And sitting here saying, I can't wait to play in this little quaint minor league ballpark, which is a capacity of 14,000, which is probably, you know, 10,000 more than they actually need because they don't draw anybody. And then to have the mayor of Vegas saying, you should really try to work it out in Oakland. They're not clamoring for your presence in Vegas as it is. So I don't know what's going to ultimately happen, if they will ultimately get it done in Vegas, but I feel bad for the hardcore A's fans out there.
Yeah, they're kind of a man without a country right now. I mean, what if nothing happens in Vegas? Are they just going to be stuck in West Sacramento for the eternity?
That's a good question, I guess. Unless they could, then they would turn and run back to Oakland and say, let's work out a deal. I don't really know, but they had an option to stay in Oakland during this time. This is a bridge time between now and when the Vegas building is supposed to be done. And the city of Vegas said, hey, we'll sign a 5-year extension on the lease with you. You can opt out after 3, assuming your new building will be right. But in order to do that, you'd have to pay a total of $97 million, which immediately became a non-starter for a cheap owner like him. So
fascinating situation.
Yeah, he's pretty lame. Sorry, A's fans. I feel bad for them. All right, coming up, John Schneider shared some insight on how off-season trades affect how they think about the draft. We'll get into some of that coming up next. It's Wyman and Bob with Brady Henderson in live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. This is Seattle Sports on 710.